Well, I wonder if I was to ask you the question, where is home, what would you say? Some here might say Leicester. Some might say Australia. What comes to mind when I ask you where home is? Or maybe it's a subtler question. Maybe it's more a question of, what are you heading for? What are you aiming at? What is life really all about for you? Some economists at the moment are saying that we may have reached what they rather gloriously call peak stuff. It's a good word, good phrase. Not just that we've got so much, why on earth would we buy any more? But that things no longer satisfy us as they once did. The quotation on your screen is from Will Hutton. He says, what we want is purpose and a sense of continual self-betterment, which is not served by buying another iPhone, wardrobe, or kitchen. And he goes on to suggest that home might be that rare material possession that begins to answer the question of who we are, or at least offers a platform to begin the happiness quest. Home matters. It tells us something of the person that I am. It is a firm foundation from which to seek happiness. So, what is home for you? Where is it? What are you aiming at? Is it just more stuff? Or are you looking for a greater significance or permanence than that? Maybe you're seeking it in common cause with others as a sort of antidote to the rampant individualism with which we live today. Now, of course, there are those who would say to us, home is where your heart is. And as we saw earlier, Jesus would concur with that, wouldn't he? For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where's your treasure? Well, if you find your treasure, you'll find your heart. What have you set your heart on? That is your treasure. And the chances are that goes a long way to being home for you. Well, we're thinking about home and destinations tonight because we've come to the third in our series of these Psalms in the 120s. We began with Psalm 120 with the pilgrims leaving a hostile environment, setting out on a journey. Psalm 121 spoke to us of that journey and its dangers and its perils. And here in Psalm 122, they've arrived. They've reached their goal. The pilgrims set out knowing the destination that they were heading for. They got a very clear goal in mind. They had companions on the journey. And for adult males in Judaism, they were supposed to make this journey three times a year. Once for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, once for the Feast of Weeks, once for the Feast of Tabernacles. So if you have a look at Psalm 122, the first verse tells of the excitement of setting out. I was glad when they said to me, let's go to the house of the Lord. Verse 2, this is the satisfaction of having arrived. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. It's an exclamation of satisfaction. We've made it, we've done it, we're here. And verse 3 says to us, what a city. Jerusalem built as a city that is bound firmly together. What a place is this? It never disappoints. I'm always glad to get here. I don't know if you ever have that sort of sense of what a place when you're up in London. Maybe you're sort of crossing one of the bridges and looking up and down the river. Maybe you're in a high rise and you're looking down over the city. I just think it's an amazing privilege to be living so close to such a magnificent world city. And just have that sense, what a glorious place it is. Well, that is the sense of our author here. What a place. But there's a sense in which that strange phrase at the end of verse 3 that is bound firmly together adds much more to the picture. That's the same phrase that is used in Exodus of the construction of the tabernacle. Couple the tent together that it may be a single whole. And in Exodus, God's promise of the blessing of his presence was met in the provision of a tabernacle, which is basically just a great big tent. A tent where his presence dwelt. The tent where his people, in the shape of their leaders, Moses, Aaron, and Joshua, went to meet with God. It is a sign of great blessing and promise. And interestingly, here in the psalm, that language is used not just of the temple as you might expect, but it's used of the city as a whole. The whole city is his city. We may talk about the whole city as a place where he dwells. And in verse 4, it is a place where all come to meet him, to which the tribes go up, the tribes of Israel, of the Lord, as was decreed for Israel. And they come to give thanks to the name of the Lord. Thanks for his justice, as symbolized by the judgment thrones in verse 5. Here is a community bound together by their Lord. Here is a community who pray for the city. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you. Peace within your walls, security within your towers. For my brothers and companions' sake, I will say, peace be within you. And it's as though the pilgrim dedicates himself, dedicates his life to God's service for the sake of his presence in the city. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. Yes, for many Jewish people of these times, maybe we might even say for all, Jerusalem was the heart of their country. It was the heart of their faith. It was home. And they reveled in the privilege of getting there. And they were thrilled to be there with others, but particularly because it was the Lord's place and the Lord's city. Well, as we look back over the previous two Psalms, I think we understood something, the sense of living apart from and away from home. I think we got a sense of the journey and how hard it was, and yet what God had provided for us in Psalm 121. But what's the significance of arriving at the destination here in Psalm 122? Well, the ultimate reality for Christian believers, the thing towards which we are headed, is not an earthly city, but rather the heavenly Jerusalem, Zion, as we sung about in that previous song. We are going towards the city of our God, the new heavens and the new earth. That's what lies ahead of us. That is home. But along the way, the Lord has given us what we might call a staging post, a foretaste maybe of what is to come. And that is the church. Let's think first of all then about our heavenly home. Revelation chapter 7 verse 9 tells us that within that final gathering will be those from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages. And as they gather together, they're caught up in the thanksgiving and the worship of the elders and the angels. It is a glorious picture. We were thinking a little bit about it on Wednesday night last week, and there's a book on the bookstall, Eternity Changes Everything, which we focused on a bit then as well. You might like just to have a browse of that later. That is the glorious future. That is the fantastic home to which we look forward if we sit here as Christian believers tonight. And we're here to help each other get there. Hebrews 3:13 says, exhort one another every day. Make sure that you help others to get to that glorious conclusion. Notice it says every day. The picture then is of a community working together, a community supporting one another, a community committed to each other such that we want each and every one to find their heavenly home. It was good to hear from Julia, as ever. And that final slide was quite instructive in this way, wasn't it? She was looking for our prayers to help her through the tougher times. And I'm sure all of us who've been Christians for any length of time will be able to say a heartfelt thank you to Christian friends, to fellow church members who have prayed for us through tough times. And we're committed to doing that for one another. And so we send each other encouraging texts as we come across them, as we think somebody's facing something. They told us they got something on this week. And so we just sort of do that to encourage them along the way. We do it when we meet together on Sundays or on Wednesdays. We do it in our small groups. We do it in our ones-to-ones. We're committed to each other. We're committed to being there for each other. We're committed to helping one another to reach this great and glorious future. And so we listen to one another, we bear one another's burdens, we're there for one another, and we seek to love one another as Jesus has loved us. It's a great and glorious future, and we don't want anyone to miss out on that glorious future. So even if you think you're doing pretty well, you think you're fine, you think actually I can make it on my own, really. I don't really need the encouragement of other people. Well, just remember that others need your encouragement. And, of course, you do need it, really. We all need each other as we head for our heavenly home. So, is that heavenly home where your heart is? Secondly, then, let's think about the Christian community. We need one another. We're here for each other. And that's why the church is so important. But the church is also important because it's holding out life to those who don't yet have it. I very much enjoyed reading this book by Mark Mennell a few weeks ago. Let me read you a few sentences from it. Our contemporary urbanized and technological world is by default a graceless and suspicious world. A society that insists on giving everyone their just deserts ends up becoming a fragmented society indeed, one in which survival depends on constant vigilance against predators and competitors. In such a dismal environment, a genuine Christian community will blaze with solar intensity, simultaneously exposing the shortcomings of the surrounding culture and attracting those desperate for something better. That's the privilege we have as Christian people, as church bound together. Yes, part of a community to help us on the way, but with a greater responsibility, a much bigger responsibility of bringing the hope of Jesus to those who don't yet share in that hope. And so just as the psalmist encouraged the pilgrims to pray for the city to which they were headed, so we will pray for the church. We'll pray that she will be a place of love and security, truth and justice. A place full of Jesus. But we're also going to pray that she won't fall into the temptations that Jerusalem of old fell into. You remember there are a few occasions when Jesus reflects on the lack of welcome he gets on coming to Jerusalem. This is what he says in Luke 19. When Jesus drew near and saw the city, he wept over it, saying, "Would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. For the days will come upon you when your enemies will set up a barricade around you and surround you and hem you in on every side and tear you down to the ground, you and your children within you. They will not leave one stone upon another in you because you did not know the time of your visitation. Jesus, the Messiah, descendant of David, came to his city and they didn't recognize the time. They refused the opportunity for the peace for which the psalmist had prayed. And because they rejected Jesus, the consequence for them was destruction. It was the total devastation of their city. And there's a warning there for us, and it's a warning we must pray against. We too must pray against rejecting Jesus, shutting Jesus out, saying no to Jesus, forgetting Jesus because we're too busy with plans and programs. Forgetting Jesus because we're pretty competent people, we can run things, we can make things happen, and we can do church pretty well without Jesus, can't we? But of course, there are temptations to ignore what he has said, to invent a gospel that is more appropriate to the late 21st century, to teach lifestyles that fit with what people today want to do. Now, while we might think that the National Church and other congregations we know have taken that last option, I guess we're probably more prone to the first two. We're competent enough to run church without Jesus. We're quite busy enough, and so we might forget Jesus. So to pray for the peace and security of Jerusalem today is to pray against the things which threaten this city, threaten his church today. So we need to be praying for the leadership of our church. Yes, both at a national level, but particularly at a local level, that we don't fall for the deceptions and distractions of the enemy. And pray that together, as his people, we will discern what is right. You see, those who don't yet know Jesus may think that their needs will be met by a new iPhone, wardrobe, or kitchen. They may think that owning their own home is the goal, the pinnacle for which they're aiming. But there are suggestions in the world at the moment that that's not all, that people are beginning to see through that. And increasingly, they will need to find the one who alone provides true satisfaction. The person of Jesus, the one who has, by his own death and resurrection, made it possible for each and everyone to come to that eternal home, to provide us with a community to help us on our journey. So let's value church. Let's value our gathering together. Let's value one another all the more. And let's rejoice in all that God has given us together. And let's see the necessity of a vibrant, loving Christian community, not just for ourselves, but for the watching world and those who don't yet know, love, and serve Jesus. So is this home, the church, where your heart is? The psalmist speaks of what lies in the far future and speaks of what we can enjoy today on the way to that future. Is that where you'd call home? And in both places, that distant future and what we experience now, the Lord is present. In both places, we have a God-given unity. In both places, there is welcome and room for all. And in both places, praise and thanksgiving abound. But we must pray for the Christian community, because it is under threat. We must pray that it will continue to follow Jesus. And all the time remembering that what we look forward to is the only place where we will find permanence, peace, security, and prosperity. The heavenly Jerusalem about which the psalmist writes, the heavenly Jerusalem for which he and we long for.